I think if there's one comic, stand-up, or other, that who's been inspirational to a generation of stand-up comics and humorists of all sorts, it would have to be Bobcat Goldthwait. I'm sure you'd agree. It was a turning point in stand-up history because he brought attitude to the whole process all at once. And he burned Jay Leno's couch at the same time. So that was... We got him on line right now. Bobcat is with us from California, and he's back in stand-up now, too, so that's pretty exciting as well. Bobcat, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am. Good morning.
Nice to talk with you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It's kind of a thrill. It's a thrill for me.
Oh, well, that's sweet, but I'll crush it right out of you.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Attitude.
Yeah, I was a fan of the guy, and I talked to him. Kind of a jerk. That Bob Scratch Goldfarb didn't even laugh at one of my Canadian football jokes.
Goldfarb was good. But, you know, and you must have when you first started out doing stand-up, you must have taken quite a bit of abuse because people probably thought you were trying to imitate a mentally challenged individual and didn't cotton to that. But, in fact, everybody in Syracuse talks like that. Is that not true?
That is quite true. Syracuse, it's because it's so cold, actually.
Yes.
That's why folks talk like that.
Yeah.
I grew up in Syracuse. You know what's a little known fact, and I don't want to name drop, but I grew up with Tom Kenny, who is the voice of SpongeBob.
Yeah, Tomcat. He was Tomcat and you were Bobcat, right?
Well, not that I have a problem with that, but that makes us sound like longtime companions. actually, he was called Tomcat before I was called Bobcat. But, yeah, we knew each other since we were 6 years old. I was introduced to Tommy. Well, I wasn't introduced. We went to a Catholic school, and this nun, I made her cry, and she dragged me into his classroom. And this nun was sobbing, and she said, "I can't take him anymore." And then after that, he introduced himself at lunch because he thought it was cool that I could make a grown nun cry.
Yeah. Do you remember how you did that, or is that not...
No, but, you know, I had a lot of questions growing up in a Catholic school, so I think I made her snap finally.
Yeah, that was probably it.
But our nuns were really strange because we were in Syracuse. I don't know what it was. We had a bunch of Hawaiian nuns. It's really, I've never discussed this before, but all of them were there. Tommy used to point out that most of them went to the convent on a wrestling scholarship.
Did you get through that particular school, or did they transfer you?
Yes, I did, and then I went through a Catholic high school also,
right?
Which I was the homecoming king, which is very strange.
No kidding.
I mean, it might have been a joke, like maybe all the kids got together.
Uh huh. But you and the queen? Do you remember who she was?
We still keep in touch. That's my lovely first wife. No, not really.
No.
I went back to high school reunions, but it's very strange to go back because it's because I'm not in front of the camera anymore. Mm-hmm. My friends will think like, "Hey, hang in there, Bob. You know, hang in there." And I'm like, "I just had a movie at Sundance."
Yeah, yes. A Catholic school background, is that good for comedy?
I believe it's the equivalent of Catholicism is much like growing up Jewish, I believe, for comedy. You know, I think it's pretty much the same players, you know. It's just, I guess that's just what you want to believe about different characters, what their magic powers are.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it any better myself.
I'm trying to be polite.
I know, and it's so unusual. I don't feel you should have to be.
Well, you know, this whole thing of me being on NPR is just as much shock to you as it is to me.
Yeah.
I think it's got something to do with my community service work.
You're not the typical NPR profile.
Most people actually think I'm dead.
Ah.
I think... Your crowd seems kind of a little wondering about me right now. I think I'm trying to get a gauge on them. I think some of them know who I am and were expecting me to go, which would be annoying. And then a lot of them seems like they're young, and they probably weren't even alive when I was relevant.
Yeah. And they don't look the same either, right?
Well, you know, I am out doing stand-up again, yeah. And it is kind of refreshing to have young folks come to see my shows that know me just as a guy who makes movies, which is really weird.
Yeah. And because you are a director, and the most recent one, God Bless America, right? The one that did Sundance?
Yeah, I just finished a movie that's about Bigfoot.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just finishing it up now. But, you know, I also used to direct on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Right,
and,
Kimmel.
But I quit that. I was like, This guy's going nowhere. I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
I got to lose this guy. He's holding me back.
But what a thrill.
He got a star yesterday on the Hollywood.
I know. Well, I saw that. They're giving him out to anybody now.
Well, I not really, because my wife called trying to get me one.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, who's the star for? And she goes, Bobcat Goldthwait. And then the guy goes, oh, the posthumous phone line is another line you have to call. 100% true. And the guy, she goes, my wife goes, he's not dead. And she goes, no, ma'am, he's dead. Such a drag. But
I didn't know there was. There's a posthumous Hollywood star line to call.
I think they give those out easier.
Oh, okay. But where are they really down? Where they're down the block and around the corner now on those stars anyhow. Where would you end up?
Yeah, you're not even on Hollywood Boulevard. You know, no. I just want like a cul-de-sac.
An alley or something.
Yeah, an alley is fine with me. Yeah. It is quite an honor to, and then you realize soon it's just, you know, there's hobos sleeping on you.
Yeah. But I think people don't appreciate your directorial abilities. I mean, you have good direction. This God Bless. In fact, I have a little clip here from. Would you mind if we played it from God Bless America? It's where Frank does his in the office there.
Oh, sure. I'm flattered.
Does his diatribe, because I think, you know, what he says about sort of what's going on today and what people think is funny and what people consider to be, you know, worth talking about even. And no one has actually said this before. I haven't heard anyone say this about it. It's a good critique, and it comes from Frank, this guy in an office who's talking to his office mate, who's a young guy, and doesn't understand anything he's talking about, basically, right?
Yeah, and he's just like, it's the day after somebody, you know, like, it's the equivalent of American Idol, how they have, like, the, when they have people who aren't all there, and the whole place is abuzz with laughing at a guy who was on there the night before.
Yeah, here's a little bit from that.
When was the last time you had a real conversation with someone without somebody texting or looking at a screen or a monitor over your head? You know, a conversation about something that wasn't celebrities, gossip, sports, or pop politics. You know, there's something important or something personal.
You know what? Tate and Jeff were talking about that this morning. They were saying how their freedom of speech is in jeopardy. Well, you don't listen to them either?
No, I don't.
What are you, more of a KT in a snake pit type of guy? All right, and they stole everything they got from Tate and Jeff. I really don't like any of them.
How can you say that, bro? So maybe they're not politically correct, but it's funny, Frank.
Well, seeing how as I'm not afraid of foreigners or people with vaginas, I guess I'm just not their target audience.
You don't get it. If you got it, you wouldn't be so offended.
Oh, I get it, and I am offended. Not because I got a problem with bitter, predictable, whiny millionaire disc jockeys complaining about celebrities or how tough their life is. I'm not offended that they act like it's my responsibility to protect their rights to pick on the weak like pack animals. Or that we're supposed to support their freedom of speech when they don't give a f- about yours or mine.
So you're against freedom of speech now? That's in the Bill of Rights, man.
I would defend their freedom of speech if I thought it was in jeopardy. I would defend their freedom of speech to tell uninspired, bigoted, gay-bashing, racist, and rape jokes all under the guise of being edgy. But that's not the edge. That's what sells. They couldn't possibly pander any harder or be more commercially mainstream. Because this is the, oh no, you didn't say that generation, where a shocking comment has more weight than the truth. No one has any shame anymore, and we're supposed to celebrate it. I saw a woman throw a used tampon at another woman last night on network television, a network that bills itself as today's woman's channel.
Kids beat each other blind and post it on YouTube. I mean, do you remember when eating rats and maggots on Survivor was shocking? It all seems so quaint now. I mean, why have a civilization anymore if we no longer are interested in being civilized?
Really good. I think that's terrific. Same.
Well, thanks. All from the guy from Police Academy.
Yeah. you wrote the screenplay, right? You wrote that.
Yeah, and some of Frank's feelings mm-hmm. do reflect mine, and then others don't.
Yeah.
But obviously,
of course.
But you know, I think, you know, the real reason I wrote the movie isn't I'm against all these things that are in pop culture. It's mm-hmm. more about I'm interested in why we have these distractions, you know. Mm-hmm. I I'm not saying we have to get rid of reality television, but our obsession with the things and people who aren't related to us or really they don't really affect us. But this is the first time an actual like joke from my act ended up in a screenplay, because Frank at one point says that he wishes he was a genius that could take the battery in a phone and make it explode when you vote for American Idol. And, he says he doesn't want people to die. He just wants them to have a burn in the shape of a phone on their face so he can know not to talk to them when he sees them coming.
Yeah,
he'll be
right,
like.
Right.
Oh, there's nothing you're going to say that's going to improve the quality of my life.
Yeah.
I can just keep going.
Yeah. And the whole shock thing now, too, because you could have been considered, and maybe still are, a kind of a shock performer.
Oh, definitely. But
it's different now, isn't it?
I do believe that people kind of lump me in with other folks.
Yeah.
I was the screaming comic in the 80s that wasn't misogynistic or
right.
I've always been a big supporter of the little guy, of the weirdos, of the misfits. You know, that's where I come from and that's who I am. So I've never been really about bullying, you know, but people were freaked out a little bit by God Bless America when it came out, but
yeah, sure.
If I had made a documentary that explored the same topics, I would just been preaching to the converted, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to actually make a very violent movie about kindness.
Yeah, and I think you succeeded. I think you definitely did. And I love Frank. Who is Frank, by the way, in the movie, the actor?
Oh, actually, you know, he's not. It's Joel Murray, who's not far from Madison. You know, he grew up in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known him. I met him years ago, and he's on Mad Men, or he was on Mad Men, and that it's a credit, but he's Bill's brother. And
Is he? Oh, okay, sure, okay.
So
I haven't seen him in years.
He called Bill and he said, "Hey, you know, I've got the lead in a movie, and what do I do? You know." And Bill called him 3 weeks later. He goes, "I'll tell you what you do. You know, you got to pace yourself. You got to relax." And, you know, and he goes, "It's a Bobcat Goldthwait movie. We already wrapped." I had the same thing with Robin Williams was in World's Greatest Dad. And he said to me, he goes, so what is this going to take? Like, you know, 9-10 weeks? I go, yeah, if I was doing Lawrence of Arabia, you know. he dubbed me Bob Wood after Ed Wood while we were making that movie together.
Yeah.
It was very weird. You know, there's a nude scene with Robin in World's Greatest Dad, which was his idea. And then when we went to shoot it, Robin showed up and he had his whole body shaved. And I was like, wow, you just cost me the bear audience.
Probably the hair was probably in the script, though, right? Yeah, I would think.
Well,
I mean, that's what you
want
to see if you want to see Robin.
I think, like, you know, technically, without the shaving, it really wouldn't have been a nude scene. It was really, he said that the women who shaved him got carpal tunnel.
You guys go way back, too. Did you like ever work on stage, like stand-up together, Robin Williams?
Oh, sure, yeah. Sure. And even lately we've been going out and working on material and performing together. And I wrote another screenplay for he and I to do. You know, he's another one of my closest friends. And we... I was actually the best man at his wedding, his recent wedding. I mean, you know, I don't know what to say, you know, because I, you know,
sure.
Look, I have a new wife, the 09, and she's a delightful gal.
And she makes calls for you for stars and stuff. I mean, you can't buy that for love or money.
She works on the movies I make, and so does my daughter. We work as a team. It's I use all my friends, and we try to shoot really. We make them way far out of the system. I always think that's funny when I get a negative review, and they go, "Out there in Hollyweird," you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't be less removed from showbiz. You know what I mean? I'm pretty close to doing boat shows with David Hasselhoff, you know. So it's not like I'm part of the system, you know.
Have you ever worked cruises? That would be quite a cruise at Bobcat Goldthwait on your cruise.
No, but you know, my favorite cruise story, there's a comedian who will go nameless, but he bombed so bad they had a helicopter come and take him off the cruise ship. It was like the Hanoi Hilton. I kind of retired from being in front of the camera the same time people stopped hiring me, worked out really well.
Yeah, coincided, huh?
Yeah.
Serendipitous, I guess that's called when that mm-hmm. happens. But you're going back to it now. Now you're back on stage.
Well, there's a connection you make with a live audience that I don't think I stressed, Michael. My movies don't make any money.
Yeah.
This is the alimony tour when I'm out on the road. Connecting with my peeps. You know, when I was in Madison, yeah. I remember loving it and also no one coming out to see me.
Yeah.
I really loved it there.
Yeah.
I had my own booth at Ella's.
In the deli there. And
yeah,
and
Ella's Deli, they didn't come which out. Is, you know... Was I wish it, that was like in Hollywood. I would love to take high-powered meetings there.
Yeah.
Don't look into the clown's stomach. He's filming you.
That might have been at the height of politically correct or something like that. And you probably unfairly, I think, were judged to be politically not so correct. By Madison
okay.
types.
I mean, what does that, you know, it's very strange what we censor stuff now because of afraid of hurting our own feelings, and we're really not too concerned with the people we're affecting. You know, an example of that is 2 days after Gilbert Gottfried got called, got fired from being a duck voice.
Right.
They called me, and I didn't do it, but I did contemplate it for a couple of days. I was walking around going, bah, 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 you know, quacking.
Yeah.
And then, but I think it's just. I don't know why he got fired, but it's only because it was distasteful, and it was distasteful. I'll agree with that. But if you had your whole life destroyed in Japan by a tsunami, you're not going, sure, I lost my wife and kids and home, but what did the parrot from Aladdin have to say about it?
Yeah.
You know, we protect our own feelings under the I get nervous, you know, we want other people to censor us, which is really strange. Like when Janet Jackson exposed herself during the Super Bowl, the big outcry was, what was I supposed to say to my children? And what you're supposed to say was, see that woman with her breast sticking out? Don't go anywhere alone with her brother.
So that was the moral of that. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was what it was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've always walked the line, you know. I'm you know, I you know, like to me a big heroes for me were George Carlin.
Sure.
And Andy Kaufman, two guys who you kind of never knew what their take was going to be on things, you know. And I think that's the job of a comic, hopefully, is to shake things up, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Especially Andy Kaufman, I would say.
Yeah,
Carolyn got the feeling it was a guy who really worked these things out in his head, you know. But Andy seemed to just explode and come from a whole different place with his material.
But my early stand-up, obviously, as a young man, I was super influenced by him. Like, sure. I would just go on stage. One of my earliest bits, I didn't really have jokes. I had gotten the Dear John letter, and I would go on stage, and I'd go, thank you, it feels really good to be here. And then I'd start crying, and then I'd pull out the Dear John letter, and then I'd go back to my act, and then I'd be like, my wife is so fat. And then someone would go, how fat is she? I go, I told you I don't even have a girlfriend. You know, and I'd be just crying. And it was very weird, or cleaning fish on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
In Wisconsin wouldn't really be that weird. They yeah. go, I like this guy's style.
Yeah. He can fillet a fish pretty good with his hunting knife.
I've been all over that fine state, though. I've been up the very northern part.
Yeah. Rhinelander up there?
Sure, man. I was, it was terrible. Like in the winter, would I have been playing a casino? Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Oneida, maybe, or one of those?
Oh, cheese and crackers. I'm really trying not to curse.
Yeah, no, you're doing good. So you're playing the casino up north?
Oh, no, I was just thinking about, and there's a lot of ice fishing, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what's happening in your relationship where that's a good idea.
Ice fishing?
Yeah, yeah. Honey, I love you, but I want to go sit in a box on an ice. And look into a hole.
Yeah.
Look into the dark abyss of my life.
Yeah.
How did it come to this?
Yeah. Well, you sit on a case of beer, it's not so bad. You know. it all works out in the end, as they say.
Well, you have to keep the beer warm so you can actually still drink it.
Yeah. And one other
thing. My father, when I was a boy growing up, I grew up. You know, it's funny. I grew up in Syracuse, but it was called Oneida County, and there was a brewery next in the city next door to us in Utica, and my father would just take me to the beer factory as a boy. That would be our family vacation.
Yeah.
He'd just be standing at the gate all misty-eyed like Homer Simpson.
Yeah. Milwaukee. I grew up in Milwaukee. Same thing. We'd go to Schlitz on field trips.
Really?
Really,
like
yeah.
Like as kids?
Yeah. Class field
where
trips.
It's all happening.
Yeah.
Well,
it was wonderful
A Schlitz field trip is kind of weird.
Schlitz is cool. They had these giant copper vats, and they all had dates on them, and one had the same birth date as mine on the copper vat at the Schlitz plant. I remember it on the field trip.
Date?
I won't give you my year, but it was up there engraved on this giant copper tank.
Then did you think that was installed at your actual birth?
It had to be, because it had the date on there, and then... And I got the papers to prove mine, so. Pretty cool. But you know what?
Would you point that out to kids while during the tour?
No, I was a kid. I was a kid on tour. I wasn't leading the tour.
Oh, no. I didn't mean like the children. I didn't think you had a job. I didn't think you were Laverne and Shirley.
No. I just thought it was really significant that there was a vat in the Schlitz plant that had the same birth year as mine. So that was.
See that vat? Yep. Same age. You must have been the cock of the walk.
I was for a very short walk. I was. Anywho, but you know, one other thing I wanted to say about your style, actually, your style was one of the first that took and deconstructed the typical, you know, like one line joke and so forth. I think that was kind of where your brilliance comes from. It was deconstructed. It started out as being typical, you know, take my wife thing, ended up somewhere totally different, you know, coming from an entirely different angle. I think that's a credit to you and your stylistics. That was a sea change, I think, for a lot of, you know, young comics.
Well, thanks. I mean, that's very sweet. That's very kind of you to point out. You know, I mean, I think like a lot of people, would just say, well, that was this guy who just went on stage and acted like a nut. But
yeah. Well, there's that, too.
Yeah, that was the point. You know, as a kid, I was such a fan of stand-up when I was a young boy. By the time I was in my late teens, I was kind of over it. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't care where your other sock went in the dryer. You're a grown man. Buy some more socks.
Yeah.
So And also, I was more influenced by, you know, the punk bands of my day when I was a kid, I think, than stand-up, too, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah. But you know, I think also, you know, I didn't help my own case by, and I'm not, I don't regret it, but I mean, the fact that most people got familiar with me by being in, like, teen comedies like Police Academy and stuff like that.
Right.
Which, by the way, in hindsight, if I was, I probably would have worked a lot harder on them if I knew 27 years later I'd be talking about them.
Yeah, still talking about Police Academy.
Yeah, they're actually rebooting the series, and they're going to do what they did to 21 Jump Street. They're going to make it a comedy this time.
Yeah. A lot of work to do on it, but
yeah,
it'll come out good.
I think... I think, like, you know, it is very strange. I had the career most people have at the end of their career at the very beginning. You know what I mean?
Got
I
it over with.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Talking horse movies? Sign me up.
And but what about all the voices that people that don't know that you are in movies, though? All the voices, the voiceovers or characters.
Yeah. Okay. I do enjoy that work.
Yeah.
It was funny. We were just talking about Tom Kenny earlier. It was really exciting. He works on a show called Adventure Time, which is I really love that cartoon. Actually, it's very it's great. And I was on that with him, and it was really cool because Tommy was kind of helping me perform. And and you know, Tommy always shows up in all my movies with small parts and things because, like I said, we've known each other our whole lives. But it was fun. It was very strange. It was kind of I can't explain what it was. It was a little bit like some sort of Tourette's Pygmalion where he was trying to teach me how to do something other than the one other voice people know me for.
Yeah. And were you able to branch out?
No. No, it went very well. It was really cool.
Well, I got to say, is this now the You Don't Look the Same Either tour? Is that what we can call that?
I did a special called You Don't Look the Same Either, but you know, now I'm out doing dates, but I'm just seriously, I'm just putting on the finishing touches to this Bigfoot movie, and then I'm probably about to start another movie in the spring.
Excellent. Well, it's very nice to talk with you, Bobcat.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I remain a big fan, and I know you're not posthumous. I can prove it.
Well, how do you know, though?
Yeah. Bobcat Goldthwait, thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Good talking to you. Bye. Bobcat.